And a cheerful St. Patrick's Day in the morning to everyone. This is Roy Porter in the NBC newsroom in New York, and Moscow and Tokyo are both working on peace treaties today. We're going to try both of these places, and then get another chapter in the long suffering of the British from London. Washington and the new angles in rent control contribute another page in this daily report. The timetable, still weather permitting, is set up. First, a word from your announcer, then I'll be back with your world news roundup.
The American Red Cross served our fighting men magnificently during the war years and continues to work for their health and well-being now that they are finding their way back to civilian life. For the veteran trying to reestablish himself in the community, the Red Cross is always there to give needed advice and even financial aid where necessary. While for those veterans still convalescing from war wounds in our hospitals, the Red Cross provides welcome recreation, arts and crafts projects, and sightseeing tours. These are just a few of the ways in which the Red Cross serves all America. In peace and in wars, come fire, flood, or storm, the Red Cross is always there. The Red Cross today needs some $60 million to carry on its work and turns to us for support. Give generously to the Red Cross. Now, back to the NBC newsroom and the World News Roundup.
Moscow gets down to business today with the Big Four conference digging into the German treaty question and principally the suggestions for economic unity in the four zones of occupation plus reparations. There seems to be a kind of psychological deadlock which has developed over the weekend, and some of the sources at the scene believe that Premier Stalin will intercede directly during this week or in the near future to get the conference moving along. We hope to hear more about this in a few minutes. Meanwhile, General MacArthur in Japan has called for a peace treaty as soon as possible to resolve what he calls economic strangulation, which is worse than the atomic bomb. He laid out a four-point program, which includes withdrawal of American occupation forces and turning over control of Japan to the United Nations, ending what he describes as bayonet control. Otherwise, throughout the world, Britain is suffering a new hurricane, floods, and snowstorms. Paraguay's government has ordered full-scale military operations against the Concepcion rebels after revolting troops are reported to have advanced toward the capital at Asunción. President Truman has prolonged his stay at Key West until Wednesday, a good indication that the affairs of state are not on an emergency basis. Martial law has ended in Palestine after a few new disorders without casualties. And at the United Nations, four smaller nations, New Zealand, India, the Netherlands, and the Philippines, have asked to present their views to the Security Council on our chain of islands proposal in the Pacific. For the first of our daily reports, let's go to Henry Cassidy in Moscow.
For some reason, which is difficult to figure out, the story is going the rounds today that Secretary of State Marshall is about to see Generalissimo Stalin, and something important is going to be done about Soviet-American relations. This may be the usual weekend conference speculation, the kind that springs up when nothing else is happening, as nothing happened here yesterday. But it is a fact that diplomats are talking about the possibility of a Marshall-Stalin meeting. When the Secretary arrived a week ago, he said he had no appointment with Stalin. In fact, he was one of the few American envoys to come here without a letter for Stalin. But this is about the time in the conference when Stalin begins to invite the chief delegates to the Kremlin for a talk. The possibility of such a meeting cannot be confirmed in the American delegation. Our delegates are saying very little, and there are probably correspondents in Washington who are better informed on what is going on here than we are. We've seen the secretary only once, and that was before the conference began. We are not permitted to enter Spaso House, where the secretary is living. I know of five correspondents who have received messages from their home offices complaining about the lack of information in their stories. But until we are told something, we have to report the kind of speculation that goes on in diplomatic circles. A letter from Secretary Marshall to Foreign Minister Molotov was released last night, refusing to enter into a conference on China, but agreeing to exchange information by mail. The main point of issue is the removal of American troops from China. British Foreign Secretary Bevin is drafting a similar reply. This morning, the deputies for Germany discussed again the participation of other Allied powers in making the peace. United States Ambassador Murphy proposed that 26 smaller countries, which declared war on Germany, be added to a consultative body. The Russians objected particularly to including Turkey, and no decision was reached. And this afternoon, the ministers are taking up economic principles and reparations. This is Henry Cassidy in Moscow.
General MacArthur's suggestion on what to do with Japan now is the first indication of the future of that occupied country. His statements to correspondents came as a distinct surprise. Tell us about it, George Thomas Folster in Tokyo.
General MacArthur says his headquarters should be shut down and that Japan should be turned over to the United Nations as soon as possible. General MacArthur had lunch today at the Correspondents Club here in Tokyo. When he said, "This is on the record," he caught us all with our notebook somewhere else. MacArthur boiled down the occupation job to three major phases: military, political, and economic. The military phase is over. Japan's forces are disarmed and scattered. She has stripped the munitions plants and has renounced war in her new constitution. MacArthur feels Japan is convinced that war doesn't pay. The political phase is nearly complete. And MacArthur believes that Japan has gone just about as far as she can go politically under the occupation. Japan's basic laws and standards have been changed by the Allied occupation. And MacArthur thinks the average Japanese is beginning to realize that a nation exists for the welfare of its people and not for any small, autocratic, feudalistic groups. Discussing the economic phase, MacArthur explained that Japan is suffering under a more dangerous economic blockade than she did even during the war. The Allied powers are strangling Japan, according to the Supreme Commander, and SCAP has been a bottleneck to foreign trade. Foreign trade must be released from military control and resumed swiftly if Japan is to become a civilized, democratic nation. Regardless of what happens in Europe, MacArthur advocates a quick peace treaty for Japan and the withdrawal of all Allied military personnel from Japan. MacArthur's statements today strike a particularly peaceful note in this world of tension, while everyone else is aggressively advocating extending our frontiers.
That was George Thomas Folster in Tokyo.
Britain's population is having more trouble, and it has now gone from snowstorms to coal shortages and now to a hurricane. For 7 years, the British have taken it on the chin, and it's no wonder that they are getting a little tired of it. For the story, here's Merrill Muller in London.
A surprise overnight hurricane left a trail of death and destruction throughout snow and flood-brown Britain today, with at least a dozen persons killed and thousands of square miles of property affected. More rain and gales, perhaps again reaching hurricane proportions, are promised for tonight, although at this minute some much-needed spring sunshine is helping the country struggle out of its misery. Where snowdrifts and floods fail to affect the nation's communications, last night's hurricane completed the job. Gusts of wind up to 100 miles an hour in strength brought telegraph poles and trees crashing over railway lines and roads and whipped up the floodwaters to raging torrents. Gales blasted through towns and cities, leaving collapsed buildings, destroyed chimneys, disintegrated walls, and puffed out prefabricated homes. Although most districts today reported a lessening of floodwaters, while Army amphibious vehicles struggled to rescue an estimated 10,000 marooned families, the Thames River has again reached record heights in the Reading District. Here, according to the lock keepers, the river was equal to its record flood of 1894. Earlier today, it was expected that this crisis would not spread, but when the Air Ministry's latest weather forecast was announced at noon, it was admitted the situation could easily become disastrous. Industrial activity is sharply curtailed, and the nation's agricultural program is completely stalled. The Ministry of Agriculture started making plans today to return to its wartime practice of overnight farming under RAF floodlighting just as soon as the ground is fit for seed. Meanwhile, here in London, there's a spreading hotel strike over union authority. The famous Savoy and Barclay are already on limited kitchen and dining room services, and the strikers are asking London's wholesale markets to come out in sympathy. This would affect the entire capital's food supply. And Attlee's Labour government this afternoon faces a test in the House of Commons. He's going to be asked to explain President Truman's policy for aid to Greece and Turkey. And there might be a lot of good, sound, anti-American arguments from the rebel Labour left wing. This is Merrill Muller in London.
A new plan on rent controls is being advocated in the nation's capital, including scrapping part of the present hold-down program. The suggestion would bypass the dying OPA and put supervision into a decontrol board. Give us the details, Leif Ead in Washington.
This morning, while Washington's waiting for Paul Porter and our ambassadors to come home and tell us about Greece and Turkey, the men on the Capitol Hill suddenly find themselves face to face with an old problem, housing. With every indication that before it's through, this will be a knockdown and drag-out battle with no holds barred, just like the slugfest over OPA last year. The beginning is this morning's hearing on Representative Wolcott's bill to take all controls off the building industry. Wolcott was one of the leaders in the war on OPA last year. And one of today's witnesses on his new bill is Frank Creedon, the housing expediter who took over from Wilson Wyatt. Creedon has a report in front of him right now that's saying that we won't reach our million-dollar housing unit goal this year, that the best we can hope for is 825,000 permanent homes started this year, even with full federal money help and controls. So our subordinates who drew up this report recommend that we keep on channeling scarce building materials into housing and keep the restrictions on commercial building through September at least. And it's not by accident that this report leaks just before today's hearings. But that report is like a red flag in front of the real estate groups, which keep what are called legislative representatives here in Washington. A Senate Banking Committee takes up tomorrow the Wagner Ellender Taft bill for subsidized low-cost housing, the one the real estate men call the wet bill. Taft has revised it, but its enemies say it's the same old omnibus with a thin coat of fresh paint to cover up the red. Otherwise, in Washington this morning, Chairman Knutson of the House Ways and Means Committee says that hearings begin next week on reciprocal trade, which should bring on another Donnybrook with fighting both in the open and undercover. This morning, Senator Harry Kane wants to decontrol rents on new houses and remodeled houses, while Republicans are making up their minds on what to do about rents generally. And this morning, House Republicans are thinking about earmarking the first $2 billion in debt reduction for the immediate cash payment of those GI terminal leave bonds. This is Leif Eade in Washington.
And still more trouble in South America, this time during the Colombian elections in which 12 persons were reported killed. First returns show that the Liberal Party is retaining its hold on the Colombian Congress, but the final results won't be in for several days at least. The Liberals now outnumber their opposition almost 2-1 in both the Senate and the House of Representatives. And more religious rioting has broken out in Calcutta, India, where Muslims and Hindus have been battling off and on for months. This time it was a rock and bottle fight. There's more news. I'll be back in a moment. Now here's your announcer.
During the past few years, we've been suffering in this country from an acute shortage of trained nurses to staff our hospitals, clinics, public health services, and industrial medical facilities. Demands on these services have increased enormously, particularly because of the widespread use of hospitalization plans, but the number of new nurses has not kept pace with them. To alert and enterprising young women, the nursing profession offers a wide choice of jobs at good pay in such specialized fields as industrial nursing, psychiatric nursing, laboratory technical work, and work in the public health service or Veterans Administration. 1,300 accredited schools of nursing from coast to coast offer a thorough 3-year course which will qualify young women for these positions. If you are between 18 and 35, a high school graduate, or a college student in good standing and in good health, you may be eligible for enrollment in this student nursing course. If it's new and interesting work you want, get in touch with your local hospital or school of nursing for full information. Now back to Roy Porter in the newsroom.
The Netherlands government has undertaken military operations against Indonesian forces in the area south of Surabaya in an effort to halt further crop damage by flooding the land. The attack came only 24 hours after both Dutch and Indonesian leaders agreed to withdraw their forces about 1 mile on all fronts to avoid the possibility of further fighting. And from Athens comes the news that a parachutist in a Bulgarian uniform has been captured by Greek troops near the Bulgarian border. The source said the man was carrying documents apparently intended for the Communist Party in Greece. That's your World News Roundup for this morning. I'll be back at this same time tomorrow. Until then, this is Roy Porter, wishing you a very good St. Patrick's Day in the morning from the NBC Newsroom in New York.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.